righty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Monday, February the 18th, President's Day, 50th day of the new year. And joining us this afternoon, not working today, but on the radio nonetheless,
pre-recorded,
Mr. Dolby.
It is a pleasure to be here with you, and you have a mighty fine tie on.
Okay, it must have something to do with the purple shirt, I guess. I don't know. This afternoon, we'll talk a little bit about some of the different challenges that there are I guess the way you could say it is in the office environment.
Yes.
There are many different challenges that are out there, and it depends obviously on where you are in the entire process. So we'll talk about some of the different things that go on, how you can benefit from it if you're an employee or employer, and perhaps some of the pitfalls that you might want to avoid if you're an employee or an employer. So this one's for the employed when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of The Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the bank dude, Mr. Dolby. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, Redwood Capital Bank, comes from Emma Goldman, sometime between 1869 and 1940, said, quote, "There's never been a good government." Yeah. Boy, I got a question for you, totally unrelated, but that's where all the good questions come from, right? What do you see with the post office not having Saturday service? What ripples are you guys thinking at the bank? What does that mean?
None. I mean, really. You know, for bank, now I'm talking about myself, you know, or the bank as a business, we don't receive mail on Saturday anyway. We get the Saturday mail on Monday. There isn't a whole lot of concern over it, other than, you know, if there's a notice that goes out on a Friday because of their overdrawn or something, they're not going to get it until Monday. I mean, you're going to lose a day there, but money's not moving on the weekend anyway. So from our perspective, it doesn't really change much.
Okay, now let's talk about your business clients having Saturday not be a day either for receipts or receipt of
mail
checks,
or sending it
mm-hmm. or do you see that there will be any ripple in the business community?
Sure, you're going to have a delay in mailings. Say you send out your accounts receivable or your billings on a Saturday. Well, it's now a 1-day delay, which changes your your collection cycle increases your need for cash. Other than that, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be, every business is going to be a little different on what their needs are as far as delivery, but most deliveries anymore are not, you know, of parcels are not through the U.S. Postal Service. It's, you know, UPS, FedEx, you know. So there all are alternatives.
It's interesting for me running through those same questions, because of where the studios are located, we're perceived as a non-commercial. We're in a residential.
Right.
So we get mail now anytime from 12:30, and then if somebody's on vacation, I mean, it's gotten here as late as 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Losing a full working day.
With your mail, yeah.
Is, you know, before, way back, when we could have one that was a post office box that was in the alphabet,
mm-hmm.
instead of having a street one. Mail was here consistently. Somebody would pick it up by 9 o'clock. have a full business day to process through whatever it was, rather than, okay, you got half an hour before the bank closes. You got, oh, gee, we're supposed to respond to this thing by 5 o'clock today. We got 30 minutes and everybody's not here. You know, those types of emergency or time-sensitive things. It's certainly changed things here. But again, we're not out here on Saturday doing anything.
Yeah.
Postal related.
But there are businesses that do function on Saturday.
There are, yeah. So I was wondering if the retailer, the restaurateur, those types of folks that do rely on Saturday activity, if you guys are projecting any changes or if it's just, okay, it's something that's going on, but there's really no impact.
I think we're going to adapt to it very, very quickly. If you stop and think about it, you know, the post office, if they can close down one day a week, and, you know, I could see them going down 4 days a week.
I'd prefer Wednesday, by the way.
But the thing is, that thing is losing so much money. It's bleeding all over the place. Even with this increase that just took place in postage, that thing's bleeding. And the changes need to be made. And part of it is, you and I are corresponding more by email than we are by letter anymore. And
legal documents.
Documents, billings, and everything can be transmitted electronically instantaneously. It's just a matter of time before, the need for, the business need for postal services declines. I mean, important documents you generally send by FedEx or or even overnight with the post office. But
it's certainly not the volume.
Yeah, but general correspondence anymore is almost always, even if you write a letter, it seems like you attach it to an email and send it that way.
The thing that I look at is two billion savings, and they're talking about 40 billion whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait a minute, is this really doing something, or is this just more of a feel good?
Well, you got to
take a step towards.
You got to take if you want to reach a goal. You got to take small steps on a continual basis, and so this is just one of many that changes that they have to make.
KINS, News and Information Time. And of course, everybody has today off. KINS, News and Information. Well, okay, some have it off. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from John.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with the bank dude, John Dalby. John, we talk sometimes about office politics, and I think as a topic that either is in a personnel setting or in efficiency, and those are kind of the backdrops that we talk about. How do you set up a culture of effectiveness and efficiencies in an office setting, not interacting necessarily with the end customer, but in the office setting? How do you structure that one? How do you get it going so you're not feeling like, yeah, things are going sideways on you?
Well, first thing you have to recognize is that politics, which, you know, is generally considered at least I do, kind of a negative term. It means doing things for purposes other than, you know, what it appears are for. If I'm politically minded, generally means that I'm doing things to gain favor with people that I don't necessarily care about. So
at that moment, yeah.
Right. So depending on how you define office politics, if you use it from the negative term, the first thing you got to know is that this taps energy from the efficiencies of your operation. If people are doing things because they think it's going to further their career, even though it's detrimental to somebody else, you know, that the negativity of that is going to suck out from the efficiencies, the morale, it's going to increase turnover, et cetera, et cetera. And it only takes one individual that in a fairly sizable group, it only takes one individual to completely disrupt the morale and the efficiencies of that group.
I would hazard a guess that most people, if they haven't been in that kind of a scenario where there's one, whether you want to say it's a cancer or a dissatisfied individual, really the impact that they can have through the entire company, even if it's, you know, a big boy like you guys compared to little guys like us, or somebody who truly is, you know, 300 or 400 employees, one or two bad eggs still can cause all kinds of ripples.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had one employee in several different occasions throughout my career that has disrupted the entire branch to the point where, you know, people are wanting to leave the institution. They're not happy. You know, they want to change jobs. They want to get out of that department and so forth.
And it wasn't the boss.
No, it was not the boss. Now, but that's an interesting one, too, is statistically people go to work for a company, but when they quit their supervisor. And that's the importance of good supervision, of good management. And so you want to be very, very careful who you select to be managers or assistant managers and supervisors in your company.
And that's a whole different skill set than perhaps what they were hired for.
Yeah, a common mistake, and I know this from personal experience, is taking somebody who is excellent at their work, and they were the first one you hired. And so as your company expands, and now you have two or three people that are doing that function, as you take that person who is the best at it and make them the manager, well, they may not necessarily have the competencies, the skills, the temperament, and the leadership abilities
to be that supervisor.
Well, what you're going to find is if you put somebody who doesn't have the skills and the competencies for supervision and management into that position, they will be frustrated, as will their employees. You're going to double down on unhappiness.
It's a different job.
Yes. And I have destroyed careers by putting people into supervision positions in which they were not ready for or did not have the abilities. And it does destroy careers.
So as you're looking at setting up a fully functioning, healthy business office, are there basic tenets that somebody can go to? Or if you're looking to get employment in that kind of a situation, in an office position for a business, are there certain things that we ought to be looking for?
Well, yeah, cultural fit is very, very important. And the interview process can be extremely inefficient, and there's the ability for deception. It may not be purposeful, but there is the ability of deception in an interview process. And I don't say that just from the person who's interviewing for the job, but also for the company who is interviewing. So I do a couple of things that are a little different. One is when I'm interviewing, is that 3 seconds?
That was 30 seconds.
Okay. Sorry.
But now, you know,
we're going to carry this on
seconds.
Over.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about the interview process when we come back.
Dangling participles, gotta love it. KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with the bank dude from Redwood Capital Bank, John Dalby. John, before the break, we were talking about some of the things, the cultural fit component of having an effective and an efficient office in your company. You teased us It's time to deliver on the tease.
Sure. So in the interview process, a couple of things to give some thought about as you go through the process. One is, when I'm interviewing somebody, I generally make this statement, that the process we're going through, it is as important that you interview us and get answers about our company and our culture and who we are as it is the other way around. So I want you to ask questions, and I want to have all your questions answered, because if you arrive here and you're unhappy because this isn't what you expected, everybody's going to be unhappy. So let's make sure that this is a fit both ways. Second is, I always give them my business card when we conclude the interview, and I say, every time that I've had one of these meetings, I've walked away and said, I wish I would have asked this. I wish I would have told them this. Here's my card. Call me back if there's additional information you need or you want to give to me after we meet, because you're going to have those thoughts. So let's get it all on the table. Second thing is, I want that person to be interviewed, in addition to myself, by the people they're going to work with. That way, they have some input before I've made a hiring decision. And if we do hire that person, that they have some buy-in. And by having buy-in, they are now going to want to assist in the success of that individual, as opposed to me showing up and saying, oh, by the way, I just hired so-and-so. You know, you will like them.
Works real well with kids, too, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
At what level do you hire? Do you, CEO title, get involved with at an office hire? Receptionist? A base level? Are you there through the entire continuum of whatever your office structure is in your business? Mm-hmm. Or do you allow those supervisors that you were referencing earlier to get involved early on, and then you kind of do either the kiss of death or the kiss of welcoming?
Yes. And let me explain.
You said you did like politicians.
Yeah. My philosophy is that if I put you in charge of a department, the most important thing you can do that will influence your success is who you hire and the people that you select for that. So if I'm going to put you in charge of the radio station here, if I own this thing, then I need to let you make your hiring decisions, because I'm going to hold you accountable for the results. Now, if I make the hires and then you fail, well, who's really failed? You or I. But at the same time, the cultural piece is there. So the way I approach it is I want my supervisors to do the hiring, but prior to the actual hire, once they get it down to one or maybe two candidates, I want to meet with them, and I retain what I refer to as veto power. So
So everybody else gets one vote, and you get cumulative plus one.
Well, no. I don't make the hiring decision on the yes side. I make the hiring decision on the no side.
Oh, so you're just a negative.
Exactly. So okay. I'm meeting with somebody so that, you know, somebody wants to hire Brian. And so we bring him in one last time to meet with me. And I sit down and we talk more about culture, and I want to get a feel for them, you know, how they're going to mix. Is this a good mix? And then if I think it's a bad mix, then I'll go back to the supervisor and say, no, we're not going to hire this individual.
So you're not hiring for aptitude. You're hiring for attitude.
That's correct. That's what I'm looking at primarily.
And others are hiring for the actual
They should be looking at both aptitude and attitude. And of course, depending on the job, you know, you can train the aptitude, but you know, if you get a bad attitude, you get a problem.
We talked a little bit earlier, John, about how some people have the ability to hire well and hire and miss some things. I would suggest that one of the most challenging things of any business is hiring, interviewing properly, knowing how to do it. So with all of the mishires that happen in the country, how do you train your hiring team, your interviewing team, to interview properly, to hire properly, to know what to look for, and almost develop that sub skills or that subset of skills called HR,
mm-hmm.
with a nice crystal ball in the middle of it all.
Well, before a supervisor makes the decision to hire, you know, they have to have approval of senior management. You know, this is our organization. So, you know, a supervisor just doesn't go, you know, I'm going to hire somebody, and they go off and do it. So it's not done in a vacuum. So I spend time, or the other senior manager, whoever's, you know, over that particular part of the bank, spends time with that supervisor in talking about what we're looking for specifically. What are the traits that we want, and so forth. And so as they go into that process, there is some guidance and direction of the attributes that we're looking for. What are the minimum qualifications and so forth? A great reference material for this process is a book called Top Grading by Brad Smart. Brad did all of the interviewing for Jack Welch, who was the CEO of General Electric. And so any of his major hires, Brad Smart actually did the interviewing. And it's a big, thick book on how to interview people. And so it's a great deal more information you need. I mean, you can't go through the process he did, but you can glean a great deal of information out of that. So that's a great reference book as you're learning to interview and as you're teaching the process of interviewing. The other part is new supervisors. I'll sit in on the interview process. Yeah, they might
so if you're a smaller company,
yeah,
you just be there on the shoulder.
Right, and just make sure that, you know, you're listening to the questions that are being asked and so forth. The other thing is you can structure it. Have questions written out ahead of time that you want to make sure that you hit these. And I've made some mistakes, and I've learned by my mistakes, making poor hires and so forth, and you have to live with them and deal with them, and sometimes you have to go through the unfortunate process of asking them to leave.
Battle scars are great teachers, aren't they?
Exactly.
Not that we're in a battle here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We're buddies. We're best buddies. Well,
something
except
like
for
that.
The tie thing.
Yeah, something like that.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the bank dude, John Dalby. John, a lot of times we are searching for people. You know, and it seems like that's the common lament of a lot of business folks. I can't find, however they define good people. Drug-free, I guess, is a good first step. And that eliminates an awful
lot of people.
Which is unfortunate in a whole different discussion and topic area. If you do, if somebody knocks on your door and says, John, I want a job with you. I like you guys. I like the people that are here. I'm familiar with everything. Here's my skill set. And you're not in the hiring mode at that point. Holding onto the resume probably isn't the most effective way of maintaining interest with the individual. What do you recommend to either an individual who's looking to work for somebody and would be the knocker on the door, or somebody who's on the other side of the door and has somebody who's just got a world of talent, and they're not thinking about hiring right now? What do you do?
I have more than once hired opportunistically, meaning I have an individual has come to me that I believe, you know, can be highly productive, highly efficient, and very skilled at whatever task it is that they do. And oftentimes, if it's the right person and I have the ability, I will make the hire anyway. And if you go back to, and I hate to keep quoting books, but Good to Great.
That means at least you can read the title page.
Exactly. Yeah. In the book Good to Great, one of the things that they talk about in strategic direction for companies is not say, here's the direction I want to go, let me get the people to get me there, but here are the people I have, what are their skill sets and where can we go? And, you know, I'm not saying every time you get a good person that comes across, you know, your field of vision, you need to hire them. But certainly take the time and look at it and say, okay, what could I do differently if I had this person? You get a great opportunity for a salesperson that can work in a market that you're not currently serving. You know, maybe you take advantage of that. You know, I'm using radio examples. You know, you get somebody that could do another talk show that has a great skill set. And so maybe you look at, you know, doing a, you know.
And a whole new set of interviewees yes. as well. Yes,
exactly. I was not inferring you shouldn't be here, but you understand what I'm saying is, you
know,
you
look at knocks that, exactly. in a bunch of different forms.
Yeah, this may allow you to do some things you're not doing now and open up some different markets.
Responsibility of the qualified person to bring an idea along with them, or responsibility for the potential employer to recognize the employee's potential and go after an opportunity that they may not have recognized.
It will not happen unless one of those two people find or comes up with that opportunity. So if you're a highly skilled person looking for a job and I'm looking at a company, I'm very impressed with people that come and interview me and know about my company. You know about our history, know what we stand for, know what we represent, know what our value statement is. That to me is very impressive that they've done their homework and that they have chosen us, not just because we have a job, but because they actually want to work with us and share our values. That's important. At the same time, if I have a certain skill set and I want to work for so-and-so, I look at it and say, okay, how does this work and what markets can I open up for them? What new products can they bring on board because I'm there?
How am I a benefit?
What value?
Yeah.
And for those people that are thinking about interviewing for jobs, let me give you a couple of tips. One is know how you're going to add value to this company. Your job is to make money for the owner.
Concisely put. Thanks for coming by.
Always good to be here.
Enjoy the rest of your day off. We've been talking shop this afternoon with John Dalby. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you.